Hello, this is Robert Rickover at Body Learning, and today my guest is Roy Palmer, who is an Alexander Technique teacher in Bedford, England. That's about 50 miles north of London. Roy, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Robert.
Roy has made somewhat of a specialty of both writing about and working with people in the area of fitness and sports in athletics. And that's an interesting area for the Alexander Technique, because it's not one that's received the attention that I think it deserves. And so I've asked Roy to talk today with us a little about what the Alexander Technique has to offer for athletes. Roy?
Right. Well, I think it's a whole new angle. I mean, I've described it as adding a new dimension to their training and to their skills. You know, athletes will, all sports people, will generally take things like nutrition, their training very seriously, but neglect what, you know, as Alexander teaches, we'd know is one of the most important areas, and that is how they move, how they apply themselves, not the technique. You know, all sports generally have techniques involved, but how they apply themselves to actually carry out their techniques. I tend to see athletes when they've injured themselves or they've started to have problems with recurring injuries. And, you know, obviously it'd be better if we could get them to the technique earlier before they have these injuries. And so quite often athletes, they will have the sort of lessons, and it's an eye-opener for them. You know, they've never considered whether they run efficiently or whether they, you know, use their body for whatever sport they're doing in a particular way. It's something they've picked up at an early age. And as I said, would just assume that what they do is the best way they can do it.
Maybe it might be useful here just to clarify something for our listeners. Unfortunately, I guess there's the same word technique that applies to how an athlete does whatever he or she does, like say a football technique or a baseball technique or fencing technique, whatever. And then there is what we're talking about here, which is the Alexander Technique, which I suppose could be defined, and maybe you could weigh in on this, as a technique of techniques. That is, it's kind of, if you've decided to do your sport a certain way, the Alexander Technique can help you to do that, to carry out that decision in the most efficient way. Would that be a fair summary of what
we're
talking
about? Yeah, I sort of try to describe it as an underlying technique or the base fundamental technique of how they then go off and perform their other techniques. And by allowing them, you know, by showing them a different way of doing it. I've been working a lot with golfers lately, and they will have their particular swing technique. And to show them through various basic movements how they can use their body with less effort and then take that back into their sports. I would always work with them away from their sport to start with. Just basic movements, so I'd call it body basics. You know, look, your hips articulate from this point. This is where you can move and turn your head from, etc. And to give them an experience of a different way of moving without the effort they tend to associate with their normal everyday activities. And so by performing these particular everyday functions, the getting in and out of a chair, standing, walking, bending, with less effort, you will then see them start to take it back into their other techniques, like how they stand at the tee or how they stand with their racket in their hand ready at the baseline, and start to notice things that they've been doing there that hasn't helped. So whether they are stiffening their neck or whether they're tightening their lower backs. So I say to me, it opens up this new dimension where you can appreciate things from your technique, your sporting techniques, that maybe you haven't noticed before, purely because you've performed them so many times that they're a deeply inlaid habit and they're doing things they are unaware of.
So I'm not a golfer myself, but I can imagine, just to take golfing as an example, a lot of golfers who are serious about it go to professional golfers, and in the States anyway, take courses in golfing and go off to Arizona or somewhere and spend a week learning how to improve their game. So part of that, I assume, is having a professional golf instructor look at the way you stand and swing and offer suggestions. What is it that the Alexander technique, especially, say, taught by an Alexander teacher who doesn't even play golf, what could the Alexander technique offer a golfer that the golf professional would not? I think that's kind of an important question to address here.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I don't play golf, you know, and yes, it's to look at what have they been told by their golf coach. How are they carrying out that instruction? And often from the golfers I've worked with, the golf coach won't see the things that we would look for, like maybe even just tightening their jaw a fraction, whether they're lifting their shoulders a fraction. And now they will say, oh, my coach has told me to relax. But again, a lot of people look at somebody who's collapsing as relaxing. And so we can give that player something that will help them interpret the instructions from their coach in a more efficient, better manner. I mean, I was down a driving range a few weeks ago with a chap there who's in his mid-50s, been playing golf for many years. And it was interesting. I just focused on one particular aspect. He was lifting his shoulders a tiny amount. Until he put hands on, you wouldn't have even seen it. But by getting him to, this was to perform a swing, by releasing that, we got about an extra 10 yards out of his swing. Now, he was quite pleased with that because he, you know, he felt he'd got as far as he could go with his swing. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting. There was a chap having lessons from a coach on the, you know, on the part next to us. And it was interesting listening to the instructions he was giving. There were so many instructions he was firing at this young lad. I thought he wouldn't possibly be able to carry all of those out. And so, again, maybe with our sort of simplified approach, you know, to say to this chap, don't worry about your golf swing. You know, you've done it enough times to know what that's about. Let's just see if you're doing anything that's preventing you doing what you think you should be doing. And so it's pointing out the don'ts, you know, rather than this is what you have to do. Mm-hmm. And it was great. We, you know, I mean, as I say, I'm not a professional golfer. I've watched a lot of a golf player even. I've watched enough golfers to be able to see when someone's swinging nicely. And as Alexander teaches, we can watch any sporting event and pick out those who have poise and have good movement. And it does generally tend to be the people at the top of their sport. Roger Federer is a great example. Mm-hmm. You know, the freedom of his movement, how quickly he recovers his balance, and to watch him in slow motion, you know, is poise in action. You know, he quickly recovers his position. He hardly ever tightens anything, stiffens his neck, but he moves so freely. And you can see in players that don't have that freedom of movement why they tend to get injured more or why they're not performing as well as they think they should be. And so, with the Alexander technique, I feel it simplifies people's sports and allows them to see it for what it should be, rather than getting themselves tied in knots mentally and physically trying to perform a technique.
Right. And if I could add a little bit to that, or maybe come at it from a slightly different way of looking at it. Your example of a golfer who was hunching his shoulders a little, and you were able to see that and to basically show him a very simple method of not doing that, right? And is that, would that be kind of the essence of it? Now, I'm going to guess that some golf professionals who, if they were teaching this person, might also see that hunching of the shoulders and might also make the connection between that hunching and maybe the swing not being quite as effective, but they are generally going to say something, as you said, like relax your shoulders. And the problem is that that instruction isn't actually likely to be very useful if the golfer was able to relax his shoulders at will. He would be doing it.
Yes, absolutely.
And already. And to tell someone to relax their shoulders is not such a useful strategy, because they're going to interpret that in a way that, as you said, might very well be collapse or pull the other way, which isn't going to improve things any. So I think a big advantage of the Alexander technique is this very simple intervention strategy of seeing a particular pattern and teaching that's not helping the movement, and working out a way that the student can basically just say no to this.
It comes down to the old means whereby, isn't it? Yes, we don't want to give them something else to do. I say, listening to this coach next to me, he was giving this young lad about 10 things to do before he even started to move. Yes, this is what you don't have to do, non-doing. And actually, I find a lot of sports people really appreciate this, the non-doing aspect, to get them to think but not to do it. And I found the other thing a lot of sports people tend to appreciate is this, the idea of the ground reaction force. You know, there is a floor underneath you that's providing all the support you need. Try and take that up through to the top of your head so you're not holding anything anywhere. And a lot of sports people really appreciate that. Whether they're, you know, addressing the ball in golf, whether, say, they're sort of at the baseline, or whether they're running. Because obviously, you know, ask Malcolm about ground reaction forces, you know, it's to get the runners to appreciate that they can let the floor do most of what they need to do, to take it from the floor.
And the Malcolm that we're referring to is not Malcolm in the Middle or or any of the other Malcolms, but a Malcolm, other famous Malcolms, but Malcolm Bach, who's an Alexander teacher in Montreal and will be, who works a lot with running specifically in the Alexander technique. And we'll hopefully be talking to him quite soon. I think someone listening to this is sort of picking up on the idea that the Alexander technique is more subtle, perhaps, than usual instructions that an athlete might get. And I wonder, someone might think, well, that's fine for something like golfing, which is, you know, where the it is, I guess you could say, a more subtle sport in some ways than, let's say, American football or British rugby or wrestling or boxing or something that was more oomph to it. How would the Alexander ideas apply in those cases?
Well, I've worked with rugby players and quite a few martial artists. I mean, they don't get much more subtle than that, really. And whatever your sport, really, if you can apply a little bit more intelligence, that sounds quite condescending, doesn't it? But to apply this different angle to your training, to realize where you're making things harder than they need to be. And certainly with the martial artists, I did work with a boxer about 5 years ago. And if you can say to someone who's, whether they do boxing, martial arts, or trying to tackle in rugby or American football, if they can learn how to increase the amount of power that they can deliver and their speed by actually doing a little less, then most of them do actually pick up on that. And it's to show people, whatever their sport, however active or involved it is, they can still be thinking as they're performing. And as I said, martial artists or the fencer that I worked with, you know, found that they developed a couple of extra yards of speed, if you like, by taking out all of the unnecessary actions they were bringing. I was a second dan at karate before I discovered the Alexander technique. And I suddenly developed so much more speed by realizing that I'd been tying myself up in knots before I tried to deliver a punch. It's the getting set thing. And then you've got to release that before you can move. Whereas if you can stay free and poised, then you haven't got to try and release that unnecessary effort, as the unnecessary tension before you move. And my kicks gained speed, they gained height, simply because, as I say, it's like taking the brake off. And it does help you develop more control. So, yeah, regardless of the sport, whether it is subtle, the subtler sports, or certainly the more vigorous, or ones that involve a lot of contact, now it can still provide people with a whole new weapon to their armory by applying what they can learn with the Alexander technique.
Mm-hmm. Now, at some point earlier, I think you mentioned Roger Federer as a tennis player and exhibits very, mm-hmm. very graceful, very efficient, we could say, use of himself in playing. I mean, he moves very easily. And I can think of another example, an older example that probably is more familiar to Americans, Muhammad Ali, the boxer in his early days, who was kind of famous for being incredibly agile on his feet. Yeah. His strength.
He was about he was about 18 stone, wasn't he? But he really did float like a butterfly and sting like a bee.
Right.
And it's great to watch the early fights of Ali.
Exactly. And 18 stone is an English system of weight.
Sorry,
you
need
to say
that.
Convert
that to pounds.
But he was relatively in size, in terms of his size, he was often fighting people who had more bulk. More muscle bulk than him, but he was very quick on his feet, very agile, and he could not have done that if he had the kind of extraneous interfering habits that we've been talking about. Now, someone like Muhammad Ali or Federer or other very really talented athletes, they, in a sense, they've kind of achieved, it would seem, what one would hope with Alexander lessons, is that these people were sort of naturals and other people have lost that natural ability? How would you see that?
Yeah, I think there are definitely people who are naturals. I think Federer is also a very good soccer player. And I believe he could have played for Switzerland. And you tend to see that players who are really good at one sport tend to be very good at a number of sports. So I wonder whether it comes down to having natural ability as far as balance is concerned, coordination, but also observation. It's one thing to be very fit and to be agile, but Federer also has to know what shot he's going to play. You know, he has to be thinking ahead of the game. And so I think there are these people who are natural with the physical attributes, but also this ability to be able to stay in the moment. Federer very rarely looks as if he's panicking. And it's interesting also, I wonder, I had this theory years ago, I've not really followed it up, whether some of the training methods that sports people use actually causes them to lose that natural ability. If you look at Federer compared to most other male tennis players, he's a lot lighter. He doesn't have the bulk in the arm muscles. Andrew Murray has bulked up quite a bit lately, and actually he is improving, although I think I must have been one of the few people in the UK that wanted Federer to win in the Australian Open, mm-hmm. because I'm a big fan of his. But if you compare Federer to a lot of other players, he doesn't have that bulk. And as I said, I do this theory whether, you know, people try to, you know, they do their fitness training, they work with weights, but whether that sometimes knocks out this natural freedom of movement that a lot of us do have to a certain degree, but others like Federer and Ali have in spades. And so that's another matter. But I also sort of, when you look at these people being interviewed, the top people of their sports also do seem to be poised in every way. You know, they Michael Johnson, you know, the sprinter, 400-meter runner, you know, they just seem to have this air about them that I don't think it all comes down to physical. But, of course, you know, in the Alexander world, we try to avoid using terms physical and mental because we do know that it's the same thing at the end of the day.
They're really two aspects of the same thing.
Yeah.
So, but again, now, from the point of view of someone listening to this who's not a Roger Federer or a Muhammad Ali, but is interested in sports activities or any kind of fitness activity and feels that maybe they're not doing what they want to do quite as well as they would like to. How would you typically work with someone to help them identify what they're doing what they're inadvertently doing that's getting in their way and how to release that? And obviously you can't promise a tennis player they're going to become as good as Federer, but what kind of direction would you be taking people in with lessons?
Well, I always start them with the chair. to
so
look
get
at.
Them, you get them away from the sport.
I get them away from their tennis rackets, their clubs, their not in their kit, to look at something as basic as the chair, to build up this idea of movement and effort.
And when you say the chair, you're talking about an Alexander technique
process
called chair work, which is basically just standing up and sitting down, right?
Yeah. Which so something as simple and easy as
a simple everyday activity within which to show someone some basic ideas.
Yeah. And it's really to open up their sort of eyes. And most of us probably had this experience with our first session where we were asked to get out of a chair. And found we did all manner of things. You know, we put our hands on our legs, we pulled our heads back, we pushed forward with our chest, we tightened the lower back. We did all of these things that were completely unnecessary to get out of the chair. And so working with a sports person who may, you know, be, you know, highly sort of in a technical sport and very skilled in that, to bring them right back to something as basic as getting out of a chair, and just to highlight to them where they're making things harder than it needs to be. With most of them, you can almost see their minds racing ahead thinking, well, what do I do when I'm serving? Or what do I do when I'm running? And so it's just a sort of a very quick example that you can do. And obviously, if you can get them to prevent or to stop doing those particular activities and give them the experience that they almost float out of the chair, then again, you can see them thinking, if I can do this in my sport, then they start to see the benefits. And so really it's to try and give them that early experience. Of course, sometimes it doesn't work that quickly.
Right.
Some need a lot more. But then it's to build it up from that, right? If we can get in and out of a chair without doing all of those things you think you need to do, let's have a look at walking.
Right.
Can we get a light springing us in the step when we walk?
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's really trying to turn off all of those unnecessary bits and pieces they're adding.
So again, just to clarify for our listeners, the particular sort of Alexander technique teaching strategy you're describing is to work with people in totally ordinary, non-pressured type activities as a way of showing them some ways of organizing or reorganizing themselves that they can then carry over into what might be the reason they came to you in the first place, which was to play tennis better or whatever. Now, in addition, however, I know from what you said earlier that you, at some point, perhaps not right away, you would actually, if a golfer came to you for a lesson, you would go get them to do some golfing and you'd work with them. Or I know I often work with runners, and I get them out on the sidewalk in front of my house, and off they go, much to the amazement of my neighbors. So could you say, so that's a sort of another way of teaching people, and from what you're saying, your approach generally would be to start working in not the activity that the person is most interested in, move towards the actual sports activity.
That would be the general approach. I mean, sometimes with runners, I'll do a group course for runners, and so we just go out on, you know, down to the park and straight away. But I always start them walking first. But generally, if possible, yes, it would be to start them well. And some teachers will go straight into that activity, and there's not a problem with that at all. But again, it's being able to find that, it's to create that little light bulb moment, isn't it, that gets them switched on. Quite often you may get people there, they've just come along and they're thinking, who on earth is this person to tell me about my sport if they don't even play it? But it's, if you can get that little light bulb turning on, just one little thing they were doing that maybe they didn't realize they were doing, then you have their attention. And yes, it's just finding the way to do that, really. And as I say, with the trained eye, then quite often you can watch them performing a sport that maybe you know nothing about. But as I say, it's just looking for those telltale signs that an Alexander technique teacher would recognize as a performance limiting action.
And I might just mention that one of those telltale signs would be a tendency for a performer to stiffen or tighten their neck a little bit as they go into the performance. And I know just from watching TV from time to time, it's interesting for me to watch ice skating competitions and to just watch the skater's head-neck relationship and see how that compares with what the judges have to say about the skater or the ratings the skater gets. And I found that pretty much universally, the skaters that get marked off for not being as good as they might, you'll see a little bit of excess tension sneaking into their neck. And often the best way to see that is to turn the sound down on the TV. So you're just going for the visual. And you can see they're just a tiny bit of pulling their head back onto their neck. It's often very subtle. That there's a pretty direct correlation between that and the quality of the performance. So an Alexander teacher working, let's say, with a skater would call that to a skater's attention and give them a strategy for not doing that. Would that be fair to say from your perspective?
Absolutely. I mean, to look at, you know, or the jaw. I mean, sometimes the tension in the jaw doesn't always show in the neck.
Exactly. Yeah.
But straight away, you're interfering with your head writing reflexes.
Exactly. But with the nice thing about the head-neck relationship as an intervention point and as an observation point is that you can often see it really clearly, say on TV or if you're actually at a competition or sports event. And is there anything else that you would like to say to an athlete listening to this that
to go and try a session with an Alexander teacher, if it works for them, then they're going to get so much more from it than they'd ever expected. And it's not, we've been talking about the physical, you know, a sports person listening would probably think of everything we've talked about as being the physical, but there's so much more to the technique than that. And actually, one, just to touch on it briefly, one of the main benefits I think of learning the Alexander technique is to get you in the state of mind where you are in the here and now, which is what I see as the first stage to getting into the zone. And when you're in the zone, then everything is just so much easier. And so it really is an all-encompassing. You know, we do tend to think of physical training, and then they talk about sports psychology and mental training. But the Alexander technique has all of that, all encompassing. Because what Alexander did was quite remarkable, really. You know, the theory, the philosophy that he developed through practical means. And so there's so much more that they could learn with the technique that isn't purely just related to their physical or technique. It's related to their, you know, state of mind, which obviously all professional athletes know is key to a, you know, a peak performance. And really to watch the people that are the best in their sport and to see what it is that they are not doing. Everybody looks for, like, you know, Roger Federer's serve or his technique. But it's to look at them and see how free and easy they appear to be in their movement and ask themselves, do I look like that? Am I trying too hard? And if you're trying, Bruce Lee would say, if you're trying, you're wasting effort.
Wow, that's a great quote. Yeah, that's exactly right.
You know, there's a lot.
And I think the word try is an interesting one because it generally connotes it generally gets interpreted as a little extra effort.
Extra pushiness. I said to people, if banging your head against a brick wall isn't working, don't bang it any harder.
Right.
And it's an interesting question to ask every sports person. What do you do when you say to yourself, I'm going to try harder today? And for most of us, that just means we're going to grit our teeth, furrow our brows and tighten our necks. Because, yes, it's effort. And yet you ask most sports people, I always like to ask them, what was their best performance or their best experience? Was that difficult or was it easy? Because they'll all say, actually, it was really easy. And so, you know, if your best performances feel easy, it's because you're not doing half as much as you think you need to. And I think
that's the perfect place for us to end.
Yeah.
That's excellent. So if you're an athlete into fitness activities of any kind, find an Alexander teacher in your area, and we're going to put a link next to this interview when it's on the podcast to your site, which will have some links to various self basically self-help ebooks based on the Alexander Technique. I know you have one that you're working on right now specifically directed to golfers, but I believe you have another one that really is more general in terms of fitness activities.
Yeah, I've got one for runners, one for talking about the zone and how you can use the Alexander Technique to get into the zone, and yeah, one for golfers. And I'd say to people, and it's not unrealistic to say to sports people that if they go and find an Alexander teacher, they will be able to show them something very quickly that they have not experienced before.
Absolutely.
That they won't have been shown before.
Absolutely. And, absolutely.
You know, that's not an idle boast, is it?
You know, no, it's not. It's not. It may take a little leap of faith for you, the skilled athlete, to go to someone who may not be all that athletic themselves, but may actually be able to show you something that will be of immense value to you. So why don't we end the conversation on that note? My guest, this is Robert Rickover at Body Learning, and my guest today has been Roy Palmer, an Alexander Technique teacher who lives in Bedford, England. That's about 50 miles north of London. He's also an author of several e-books. And are some of your books not e-books? Or you have actual
Yeah, the Zone Mind, Zone Body
Zone
was published.
Zone Mind, yeah.
Three years ago, and the golf book should be published in about another month's time.
So Roy is a prolific author in this field, and we're going to put a link to a website that will in turn have links to all of his books and more information about him. Roy, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you, Robert. Thanks for the invite.